We were in a first century church, Christian Catholic church, or even a fourth century Christian Catholic church, we would recognize many things. The liturgy, we would be familiar with it. But one thing we would not see is a crucifix. They didn't come into the church until at least the fifth century. People heard the Passion just as we did. It was laid out for them. Good Friday has always been John's day. He gives us many of the last words. But an image they did not see. The reason was they had a more immediate knowledge of how awful a crucifixion was. The Romans continued to use crucifixion for centuries after Jesus. It was only when the memory, the shared memory of this terrible, terrible punishment had passed into history that we began to have a cross that we are privileged to see for the first time today. There's a great deal that we can learn from it. I had trouble preparing the homily because as you begin to think about this, it's hard not to be moved. Christ offers us his cross as a proof of his love. But in order to see how much he loves us, we have to have some understanding of what he went through. Christ, at the time of the Jewish revolt, they were crucifying 500 people a day. Towards the end, they had 10,000 crucifixes, 10,000 crucifixions around the city of Jerusalem. There was no more wood, so they finally stopped. But that does not lessen the pain of the Son of God, the only one who was ever crucified that could have come down and didn't. Who else but him would have willingly gone to the cross? In order to be crucified, it was common to begin with a scourging. You would get the impression from John, from the gospel, particularly the ones that are not John's gospel, that Pilate was trying to appease the crowd. You see, the Jews had no power to kill. They could not carry out the death penalty. They were an occupied nation. Only Pilate had that power. But the chief priests and the scribes, they wanted him dead. More than that, they wanted him tortured to death. The Jewish law permitted only 40 scourgings, but in Roman law, there was no limit. Jesus almost certainly received more than 40 lashes. A scourging was always a prelude to crucifixion. And what the Romans would use is, it was called a flagellum. And it was had a leather whip with three ends on it that had a hooked bone. It was designed to pull the skin off of your body. You know, I have a hard time imagining that. They dug in. Now, Jesus was not your typical man of that century. His father was a carpenter, as I've mentioned before. He was a tecton, that's a construction worker. He was not just working with wood. Jesus' trade was to work with stone. That's what the temples were built in, where he was near Nazareth, where he almost certainly worked as he was growing up. The man on the Shroud of Turin is a very heavy built man. Jesus was in the prime of life. He was probably not a thin man, very well built. It took a lot, but they nearly killed him. So after that, normally in a crucifixion, the condemned man or woman, they were usually men, would be stripped completely naked. Part of the humiliation. With Jesus, they did not do that. They gave him back his cloak. But before they did that, they played a game called something called taunting the king. It was a game that the soldiers would play. And when they heard that Jesus had claimed to be a king, they played that game on him. He was not the only one that had ever been mocked in coronation. But Jesus got this crown of thorns. We're kind of fortunate here. I don't know if any of you have been to the museum at Mount Angel. I'm sure some of you have. They have a crown of thorns there. And it shows you the kind of plant this is. It's the thorns are at least an inch and a half long. And they would have woven it so that they were all pointing inward. You can just imagine. This was not a halo as we see here. It was probably a cap. Very hard just to make a halo out of this stuff. And they would have beat him, you know, and all this. Just imagine. So they finally put his clothes back on him after taking off the purple robe that they had put on him. By this time, the blood would have dried a little. They ripped it off of his shoulders, along with that loose skin. Just imagine. Having thus roughed up his skin some more, they give him the cross. Christ almost certainly did not carry a full cross. A full cross would have weighed about 250 pounds. A man in that condition could not have made it. And it was vitally important that Christ be alive at the scene of the crucifixion. He was not supposed to die until he had suffered. That was the torture. The whole idea of a crucifixion was they told everyone, don't let this happen to you. If you're not good, this will happen to you. He was a public spectacle. Almost certainly, although we do not know for sure, he had the crossbeam. That was the common way of carrying the cross. Even this was too much for him. They had to get Simon the Cyrene to carry it. He had been beaten so severely, he had not slept for 2 days. He was not allowed to drink water. He had to experience a ravenous thirst. Have you ever experienced a ravenous thirst? I had food poisoning twice last year. Once I did to myself, and I could not drink water for 2 days. And I had a ravenous thirst. If I took one drop, everything came up, you know? It's the first time that I understood something of what Christ was talking about. I thirst. I was dying for something to drink. All that blood, all that liquid flowing out of him. He carries the cross. He was not walking on asphalt. He was walking on semi-paved ground. This is the first century. He was barefoot. He had been beaten. He was carrying a heavy crossbeam. He fell many times. And each time he fell, it hurt. He nearly died on the way. We know this because he did not last long on the cross. He got an especially severe beating. They got him real good. So you think you're the Son of God? We'll show you. You can imagine. When he got to the place of crucifixion, some people had their hands bound with ropes. Jesus seemed to indicate that perhaps that's what would happen with Peter when he told him, one day you will stretch out your hands and someone else will bind you and take you where you would rather not go. And Peter, of course, the tradition is that he was crucified upside down. But of course, with Christ, he was nailed to a cross. This is where the Shroud of Turin is particularly interesting. Because we know today, because we have found, only in this century, the remains of a crucified man. Only one whose bones we have found. And they are nailed in the wrist. There have been experiments done with cadavers in which they've crucified them. And if you put a nail in the palm, it pulls out. Jesus was not nailed in the palms. There's a little hole. I'm not a physician, but there's a little hole right here. And all the nerves go right through that hole. And they aimed right for that. It's the only spot that would hold up a body. And you can bet that it really hurt. They aimed for that nerve. And it's interesting that, of course, that's on the Shroud of Turin, which no other artist used. After the hands were nailed, the thumbs would immediately curl inward. That's even true on cadavers. You see that on the Shroud of Turin. Christ's hands would have come in like this. That's very interesting. This cross has got a fulcrum down here. I used to think that that was an act of mercy. It isn't. Have you ever seen a cross where sometimes they have them under the hands? Sometimes you see the little V of wood under the hands. I've seen these. If you see a fulcrum, it means that they wanted the person to last longer. They wanted the torture to go on. Death by crucifixion is death by asphyxiation. Once you're in this position, in order to breathe, you have to somehow get your body pulled up. There are only two ways to do it. You either pull up with your hands or you push up with your feet. Either way, you're pushing against a nail that is driven right into your nerves. You can imagine what that felt like. The body starts to sag after a while. Not very long, and the body will start to sag. And at that point, the condemned criminal can begin to push up with their feet. And the fulcrum was designed so that they could push longer and suffer longer. When Jesus spoke from the cross, he only said very few words, because when he did so, he'd push up and he'd say, "I thirst." You can see how hard it was for him to speak. Every word is so powerful because he could hardly talk. "Behold your mother." He had to say that for all time. "Behold your son." Everyone at the foot of the cross has a mother and is her child. So it's no wonder that Christ did not speak more than he did. Because of the Passover, all of the bodies had to be taken down. And so when they came, as Jesus had died, he should not have died in 3 hours. Not a man in his condition, not in the prime of life. Almost certainly he did not have a fulcrum, or he would not have died as quickly as he did, unless he had been beaten nearly to death. It was very rare for someone to die that quickly. They were usually up for several days. Oftentimes, the cross was placed very low to the ground so that animals would come and torture them. And they were left up until they were picked clean. But a family member could ask for the body, and that's what we hear in Jesus' case. So they come along. I hope I'm not being too graphic for you. They come along. If they want the criminal to die, they broke the legs. That eliminates the ability to push up, and they asphyxiate. With Jesus, he was already dead. But to be sure, as an act of mercy, the centurion, who had become a believer in the 3 hours, he stood guard to make sure that nobody took the body down. He had become a believer, watching Christ in his dignity pierced his heart to end his misery if he were still alive. And so we get the blood and water that flowed out, which has a medical explanation. It's another note of authenticity that somebody was there who wrote that. Jesus then was taken down from the cross. I think it's good once in a while to remind ourselves some of those things you knew, maybe some of them you didn't. There have been times in my life when I've wondered if God loved me. Have you ever felt that way? Why does this person have to suffer? I visited a family today whose parent died today on Good Friday, and many of us have lost loved ones, or we've suffered, and we've asked God why. He has not answered us the way we want. We question. We are finally left with the cross. This is God's answer to the suffering in our life. And I was reading last night in St. Faustina's diary. She's a mystic that Pope John Paul II canonized, and she had these mystical conversations with Christ. And I was reading last night, and Christ was saying to her, and hence to us in this diary, he said, "I don't know what more they want. How else could I have shown my love? What else could I have done for them? Not only did I die for them, but I gave them my body and blood so that they could be with me on the cross. What more could I do?" There's a famous story of Mother Angelica, and I will finish with this. She had been particularly perturbed about something long before she was famous. But she had a way of communicating with God, and she came in, maybe some of you have heard this story. She came into the chapel in the convent, and she said to the Lord, she said, "Why me? Why is everyone picking on me? Why is this so difficult? Why have you been so tough? Why me?" And she said, our Lord said to her in so many words, "Yes, Angelica, and why me? And why me?" Your suffering and my suffering means as much as his does. If that is sanctified, then all of ours is too. He invites us to share, while in our brief life on earth, something of his passion so that we can share his resurrection on the last day.